You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 310. On today's podcast, Justin Lewis, director of Armadale Capital, talks about the company and answers some of your questions. If you submitted one, of course, via SurveyMonkey, I put it out there on Twitter. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Quindel. Remember Quindel? Her old friend Quindel. There was one time when Quindel was never out of the press there, or, you know, headlines. And we featured on the podcast every other day, it seemed like. But they've been quiet recently. But I think Alan's still invested. He stuck with them through thick and thin. And he gives an update because their results were released today. Also, the penny stock with potential. That's a feature suggested by you, or the content of that feature is. And if you know of a potential penny stock with upside there, please click the link here at sharepickers.com. Suggest it. Oh, fill out a form. It takes a couple of minutes. And I could be featuring it on the podcast in the next few episodes. Also, if you want this podcast dedicated to you, and you listen to this podcast, and you think you get a bit of value from it, you know, you're not so much a fan, because that's impossible. But if you get some value out of it, and you would like this podcast dedicated to you, all you need to do is go to iTunes, click the link here at sharepickers.com, and give me a 5-star rating. It's going to be 5-star. And a review. It doesn't have to be flattering. Just tell me what you're doing when you listen to the podcast, and I will dedicate a podcast to you. I'm at, I think, I've got 89 5-star reviews. I'm going for the 100. And so come on, if you haven't done it, I know it's a bit of hassle going to iTunes and trying to find out where to write it and all that stuff. But if you can take the time, forever and ever, your name will be associated with one of the episodes of this podcast. Oh, is there a bigger medal of gallantry than that? Yes. Joining me on the podcast right now is Justin Lewis, director of Armadale Capital. Justin, thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Because you are in Melbourne. What's the time out there right now?
It's 9:10 at the moment in the evening.
So you're working late, fella. It's a busy day for you, is it?
Yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah.
Living the wrong side of the world. It's a very nice place to live, but it is always on the wrong time zone.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, there's a lot of people who are interested in your company. I've had a lot of questions submitted to me, but there are people, I assume, listening to the podcast who've never heard of Armadale Capital. So if you can, Justin, cracking name, by the way, take me through, you know, basic background as to what you do.
Armadale, well, as you know, we listed our name. It started in its current form really as an investment company. Looking to invest in resources projects in Africa. And our focus was trying to identify projects that we could bring into production in the near term. So it had fairly short lead time into bringing into production, where we could add quite a lot of value, and where the capital requirement, both to add that value and then also the capital requirement to bring the project into production, were all relatively small, given where we are in the commodity cycle. So in that context, we acquired the Umbakoto project in the southwest, gold project in the southwest corner of the DRC, which I can come on and talk about in a minute. Mm-hmm. The other asset we own is a sort of historical asset, but we own a 30% interest in a South African listed business called Mine Restoration Investments, which is a kind of legacy investment from Armadale's former life as a water purification technology company. That investment in MRI is worth, well, in today's money, is worth about £900,000.
Okay.
So it actually, in the context of our market cap, represents quite a significant chunk of it.
Yeah.
But our focus very much today is on the Umbakoto gold project, which is our most significant investment. And one where we believe there is the most upside.
Yeah, and that's like I said, that's at the moment, it said you hold an 80% interest in that. And you released an RNS up recently, didn't you? Saying there's some delay going on there, isn't there? So what's happening with the delay? Why is that?
Well, not so much of delay. So just to give a sort of bit of context for people less familiar with the company. So Umbakoto is a gold project right down in the southwest corner of Democratic Republic of Congo. So it's down on the border with Zambia and Angola, just in terms of the geography. What we're focused on is a gold project. We're looking at producing about 25,000 ounces a year of gold over about a 9-year period. Importantly, the studies that we've done show that the cost to produce that gold is pretty low. So we're looking at producing it for sort of $650 an ounce before we pay taxes and royalties, and after paying taxes and royalties, that goes up to about $725 an ounce, US dollars an ounce. And that's when you compare that with the current gold price of, I think it's about $1,125 an ounce, you can see that there's an opportunity to make a pretty good margin even at what are currently relatively depressed gold prices. In conjunction with that, the capital requirement, i.e. the amount of money we have to spend to build that project, is also relatively low at about $20 million. And what our plan has always been is to try and bring the whole project into production around the middle of next year, so at the end of half one 2016. In order to get the project into production, we've basically been through lots of hurdles, we've done lots of studies, we've got a mining license, we've developed the whole concept. And the final hurdle for us is to actually fund the 20 million capex, or the cost of constructing the whole mine. And in relation to that, what we've done is we've entered into a fairly detailed heads of agreement with an outfit called Africa Mining Contracting Services, who are basically a mining contractor. And what they're looking at doing is really partnering with us on the project with a view to helping us build the project, ultimately operate it as the mining contractor, but also critically providing $20 million of loan finance to make that happen. And the announcement that we made the other day, basically what we said is that the finalizing of that funding agreement, we had hoped to do by the end of this month, so I guess basically by today, being the 30th of September. We've said that will take slightly longer because we want to do a bit more work on the ground, in particular on some of the metallurgical work, so how we process the ore. But importantly, so whilst that may take a bit longer, maybe another month, maybe it's sort of 6 weeks or so, the overall timeline to actually producing gold, so what's called sort of often first gold pour, we're still targeting for around the middle of next year.
Okay, well, do you know what?
So it's a kind of rearranging the chess pieces on the overall timeline, but very much the overall timeline is still where we want to be.
Okay, well, do you know what? That's a nice little intro there to some of listeners' questions here. And the first one is, basically, when is the funding confirmation expected, realistic dates? And did you say around about a month to 6 weeks, is that right?
Yeah, that's what we're working for. I mean, you know, the reality is that, you know, it's not something that's 100% in our control. So I can promise you that we're not trying to slow it down in any way. Mm-hmm. It's a question of working through the issues and what are some fairly complicated agreements. And I would rather take my time and get those agreements right, because we have to live with them for the next 10 years, particularly things like the mining contracts and stuff like that, which are all integral parts of this agreement. So that's our sort of current estimate, yes.
Okay, cool. Let's go to the next question. Why did they decide to include the latest drill results in the DFS at the final hour, whilst stipulating in the previous RNS they were on track to deliver in Q3?
We didn't. And we're not including the latest drill results. What we're doing is undertaking some further metallurgical test work, which will... we're looking at simplifying the whole processing route, which effectively means that in order to extract the gold from the ore, we're looking at doing less. We're looking at trying to make the route, the number of processes which one takes through, we're trying to do fewer processes. Mm-hmm. The consequence of doing fewer processes is that it costs you less to do it. So basically what we're looking at doing is bringing down the operating cost and therefore increasing our profit margin.
Okay, cool.
And in order to confirm those suspicions, there are various tests that you have to do to demonstrate that we can do it.
Cool.
But the drilling remains a sort of separate but parallel operation.
I understand. All right. Next question here. If a plant takes 9 to 12 months to build, how can gold production still be expected in the first half of 2016?
Well, it doesn't. It takes about 26 weeks from woe to go.
There we are. And I thought, yeah, there's an assumption there that it does take 9 to 12 months. So how long does it take, you're saying?
The best estimate we have is about 26 weeks from order to delivery. Now, we would probably normally allow a little more time than that. I mean, 26 weeks, you're talking about 5 months.
Yeah.
But we're certainly assuming nearer sort of 7 months or so.
Okay, well, it's good to get some kind of time frame in there, because obviously some people are unsure about that. It's good to nail that down.
I think orders of eight. There's 9 months between now and the middle of next year.
Yeah. The DFS has been delayed several times now, which obviously doesn't help the share price. What is the revised plan completion date for the DFS on the level one schedule?
Well, the DFS is really a product of the funding process. So, rightly or wrongly, the timing of the DFS is now inextricably linked with the progress we're making on funding, because AMCS have become fairly involved in the outcomes of the DFS, and it's being designed around working with them to ensure it encompasses their sort of ongoing partnership going forward. So it would fall into the next sort of into that sort of 6 week timeline that I previously spoke about.
Okay, what is the new process?
Just quickly finish on that. Yeah. Although people sort of say, "Oh, the DFS is hooked up to the share price and everything," the DFS does not really go to the value of the project in any way, shape, or form. So, the fact that people choose to make it a marker of the share price is, it is what it is, but it doesn't actually make any difference to the value of the project.
Okay. All right. So next one. What is the new process for gold extraction, and how much will it lower the CapEx and OPEX for the project?
What we're trying to do is simplify it.
Yeah.
So in effect, have less steps in the process than we currently have. And basically by doing that, you use less power, very simply. And that's one of the big input costs to the whole thing, and also potentially less chemicals, but really it's about using less power by having less steps in the process. We have some estimates what the reduction in cost is going to be, but I'm not going to speculate on it.
Okay. Well, Justin, listen, you've answered all the questions there. There's a lot of duplicates there about timings and all that stuff, because obviously from the last RNS come out. Now, what I like to do generally on the podcast, we have people listeners suggest, penny stocks with potential, and they give three reasons as to why people, should look at the company. Can you do that for me? Can you give me three reasons why, a new listener who's not invested in your company would want to invest in Armadale Capital now?
Sure. I mean, I think the biggest reason, and I say this as one of the larger shareholders and someone who's been an ongoing investor, is that I think there is a huge potential upside. The reason I think there's a potential upside is if you take the value, the market capitalization of the company today, which is around, I think it's about 3 million sterling, if you take the value of the investments within the company, so you take our investment in MRI, and that's worth around 900,000 sterling. If you then take the value, or what I think the inherent value and potential value of the Umbucoso gold project is, which has an NPV of about $33 million, so call that about 20 million sterling, British pounds, then clearly there is a very big difference between the current market cap and the potential value of the underlying project, and therefore I think there is significant potential upside in the share price. And you would expect me to say that.
Yeah.
I think in terms of a resources project, what we have is it is, I think it's a very attractive project. Secondly, you know, I think the project we have is very attractive. It's low operating cost. It's low cost to product. It's low capex cost to bring it into production, and it's pretty near term. And those things are all relatively rare in small cap resources. I think the third thing I'd say, in the context of it being a resources company, I think gold is a reasonably attractive commodity in these markets. I think it's attractive because, you know, clearly we live in fairly volatile markets. Gold, is, if you look at it, has shown a fairly good propensity to hold its value. And importantly, this, even at low values, this project still works well. But I think we've definitely probably got more volatile times ahead, and gold will remain an attractive commodity. And the other big advantage about gold is it's actually quite easy to get out. So unlike, you know, if you're building a coal mine or an iron ore mine or something, you have to move large amounts of dirt very long distances. With gold bars, you can get them out from fairly remote places fairly easily. And they're basically, you know, gold is basically a currency. So it's fairly easy to turn to cash. And hopefully, you know, be able to repay shareholders by way of a dividend once we're up in production. I guess that's the holy grail.
Yeah. Well, Justin, that's an excellent sell. It certainly got me interested. I like that a lot. Okay, fellow, one more question. Do you watch rugby?
I do watch rugby.
Although, I know you were born...
Not as much rugby as I would like to watch.
No, because you were born in England, weren't you?
Sorry?
You were born in England.
I was born in England, and my father is a Welshman, so he was gloating at me down the phone the other day, I have, my children are half Australian and half English, I guess, so we have an interesting weekend coming up.
Yeah, so who do you support then? So England, Australia on Saturday, who are you supporting there?
I very much support England.
Okay, all right, well, it'll be interesting to see.
In Melbourne, we have they're fanatical about a sport called Australian rules football.
Yeah,
and this weekend is also the grand final, which my team Hawthorn is playing in as well. So we'll be watching that and having a big party too.
Well, good luck with that, because of course I'm from Wales, and that was a surprising game, that, and I was going crazy in my living room, screaming my head off last 10 minutes of that phenomenal game. But of course you've got a big weekend, England Australia. So I hope you do. I hope one of your teams win. That's what I'm saying, Justin. And if not,
I hope Wales keep going well too. Hopefully we can have England and Wales at the top of the, with the group of death, whatever it is it's called.
Yeah, exactly. Justin, it's been lovely to speak to you. Come back on the podcast when you have more information and more news you'd like to share with investors and potential investors. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's time for the macro news and Britain's hefty current account deficit, with the rest of the world narrowed much more sharply than expected after a surge in exports in the 3 months to June. But a slowing global economy... those three words, slowing global economy, may make this hard to sustain. Do you know what? I'm thinking about the global economy. I'm thinking, well, let's look at the top. Let's be honest. Only the top five economies count, really. If those two are those five are pulling their weight, then the rest of the world will tow along, you know? And I'm thinking, America, they're still expanding. It's fine. China, still expanding. Okay, they're slowing down. Their expansion is slowing down. So say, you know, it'd be rumored to be 7%. I don't think it'll make that. Let's say 5%. 1.3 billion population. Still a big economy. Need a lot of resources, you know? The number three, Japan. I don't know. They seem to be dipping out of flatness and then expanding and flatness and contracting. But they're not in dire... I mean, you know, the last 20 years, they've been fighting deflation. And it's a battle not easily won, you know. I mean, sometimes they have small victories against it, and then they lose a bit. But you know what? They're not in dire straits, are they? So, you know, economy number three, Japan, doing fine. Economy number four is Germany. Now, they were doing well, weren't they, until this VW thing came about. And you know, the problem is the motor industry is the centre of their industry, and they're the biggest in Europe. So that's a bit worrying. And what are we? Are we the fifth biggest, I think, Britain? We're doing okay. So if you look at all those economies there, There's question marks of one, maybe two, is there? And even then, they're still expanding. So I don't think we'll see a huge slowdown in global growth. And most of it's down to confidence, isn't it? When people start talking about a slow in global economies, then that's what people think is going to happen. And it does happen. People worry, they stop spending. So we're fine. Everyone go out and buy yourself a dishwasher. It'll sort it out. Or a car. Depends what you want done. If you want to wash your dishes, you know, buy a dishwasher. Growth in the UK services sector, slowed in July compared with the previous month, according to official figures. The sector, accounting for 79% of the UK economy, grew by 0.2% compared with a rate of 0.6% in June, the Office for National Statistics said. Yeah, that's quite a slowdown. But they're only figures, you know, how accurate are they? You know, that'll probably be revised up. How can it go from 0.6 to 0.2? I don't believe that. I think it'll be revised up. British house prices growth accelerated in September, and there were signs the market in London is heating up again, mortgage lender Nationwide said on Wednesday, adding to evidence that the housing market has regained momentum. Joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
Yeah, Jess, I'm good. How are you doing?
Whoa, did you see that game last week?
Yes, I saw the game, and I sat there aghast with clasping my can of beer, not quite believing that I'd seen England roll over. But to be fair, the Welsh played incredibly well. I mean, they lost so many through injury, and they just battled back. They just had such belief. And we ran out of ideas, they can't do that this week. We looked so strong in the first half. I really thought, you know, they were in a good position and we should just be able to control the game in the second half. But they, I think it all seemed to go wrong after George Ford came on, poor lad. But there we go.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Even my most patriotic of Welsh friends, I text a group of them, and I said, what do you think? And you know, even the most patriotic, I'm watching. I said, where are you watching it? Most of them said, and a couple of them said, from behind the sofa, because everyone expected a bit of a hammering. And I think that was the problem. Mm. And my brother asked me then, after this, he said, what do you think? I said, you know what? When everyone believes it's a foregone conclusion, normally you bet the other way.
Yeah.
So you know there are upsets, and that's a game of sport, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't write a team off at that level. And it's almost like England came out really confident, going 100 miles an hour, expecting to win. And even at the best, they were never more than a try and a conversion away from Wales. And I thought, are still in this game here.
Yeah.
And even though they looked like they'd been running ragged first half or first quarter at least, they're still in the game.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think they held pretty well. And then all of a sudden, it's almost the plot wasn't going to plan. The longer the game went on, England weren't pulling away.
Mm.
And it sort of rumbled them a bit. And I thought, wow, this is... my missus went to bed, just before the match. And I was jumping up and down in my living room like a maniac. She said, keep it down, will you? But yeah, it was an unbelievable game. But hopefully a bit more luck with Australia again.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, my wife's Irish very supportive of England, but have other Welsh friends and, of course, Scottish friends as well. And it's been going on this week for sure. But I think in retrospect they should have kicked the last point. Because if we got a point each in the then the table and qualification would have looked a lot easier. I think, on such decisions do games hang? I mean, I remember 2003 when Johnny Wilkinson kicked that goal and won us the World Cup, and it was pretty close then. So that's the thing,
I did text friends when they decided that. I just said mad, because I just thought the momentum isn't with you at the moment. You don't look like you're going to score.
No.
And you decide to go for it. I thought that's a mad decision. I said, at least equalise, because they could have. And I honestly breathed a sigh of relief as soon as they said, I'm going for goal. I thought, oh, good.
Yeah.
Idiot. I thought, maniacs. Because honestly, I thought, yeah.
Well, Owen Farrell had been kicking well all game. Given that, he probably, it was a difficult angle, but he probably would have scored it. So, yeah, it would have come out. It would have been a draw. And, it would have been disappointing not to have won then, but you could have accepted a draw. But, you know, all credit to Wales, frankly. I mean, they just play brilliantly. But, lap of the gods. But hoping on Saturday. I've got an Irish friend coming over for a few beers on Saturday, so doubtless the banter will be ripe, so...
That'll be a good game, though, because, you know, when you're knocked back like that, you know, you've got to come out hungry now. You've really got to fight for it, you know, and so it'll be a good game. Australia think they're going to... They know they're in for a tough game there.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, listen, for people not big fans of rugby, let's get back on the stops.
Yes.
What are you looking at, Al? What's the company looking at?
Well, just we're talking on Wednesday, and, of course, who else could it be but our old friend Quindell.
We haven't mentioned those for a while.
It's been very quiet on the QPP front. QPP, of course, is the epic code for Quindell. I mean, I won't go into all the history because I'm sure our listeners are very familiar with it. But
there was a time on the podcast when every week there was a bit of news comes out from Quindell. You go, oh, really? And you just mentioned Quindell in the podcast, and you get extra 100-200 listeners easy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so, but they've gone off the ball a little bit, which is a good thing, I think, because the news they're associated with back then wasn't that good, really, was it?
Well, it wasn't. There were dreadful problems with the accounting accounting horrors, and of course Rob Terry and his previous administration had put the company into what was considered a parlous state. They then sold the professional services division to Slater and Gordon, and all the controversy around the state of Quindell dragged down the Slater and Gordon share price. But since then, since the new management had come in, it's been whiter than white. The everything, all of the accounts, all the reporting has absolutely been above board. And of course, they recently appointed the new CEO Indra Mukherjee to drive the company forward. And we've had a set of interim results today. Retained profit of $414 million for the period. Strong balance sheet. Cash in hand of $524 million and a further $55 million being held in escrow relating to the professional services division disposal. It's they're still carrying the legacy issues from the old company, but the new company is emerging. And as we've always said all the way through, let's not forget, you know, Quindell's, it's a big employer. It's got lots of technology businesses within the group that have great growth potential and huge potential for potential share growth in the future. One of the key issues that we discussed was at the stage the new board came in, they stated their intention to pay £1 per share back to or make a capital distribution of at least £1 a share. They've reiterated that intention today, subject to court approval. And of course, there is an SFO investigation ongoing. The FCA have finished their investigations of the earlier years' accounts. So one could make some assumptions that if this is all put to bed and that there is court approval, then Quindell could well be paying out £1 per share to ordinary shareholders. And given that the shares are just trading at between 99p and £1 today, there is absolutely nothing. There's no premium in the price whatsoever for the value of any of the existing ongoing businesses and the value of any future growth of those businesses. So, you know, Quindell to me is still a very exciting prospect.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's almost getting to the stage where Quindell is becoming boring, which is not a bad thing. As you know, Warren Buffett makes billions from what he says investing in boring companies.
Indeed.
And, there was a time it was too exciting. You know, you get sick by looking at the share price, it was so volatile. It was literally, you didn't know where it was going to be. Up 20%, down 20%, it was mad. But now it's been trading in a little range there for a while, and it's almost forming a nice little support level, like around about 95 pence, isn't it? So are you still in there, Al, are you?
I am indeed, yes. I was in before the suspension, and I remain a shareholder, because you know you've got companies within the group that include usage-based insurance solutions, policy and claim solutions, telematics. That's where vehicles report back to a central base, and there's a whole raft of technology solutions for the insurance industry here, and also in healthcare as well and other areas. So you know, Quindel's a diverse business. There are diverse revenue streams, and they've appointed a technology-centric CEO to maximize the potential of these companies and drive it forward. And as I said just now, there is no, if the pound per share is paid out, there is no premium in the share price currently for the value of those ongoing businesses or the growth potential. So, you know, it is an exciting prospect. Clearly, it's not without risk, because the court could decide, nope, the company can't pay those out. That money's got to be diverted elsewhere, in which case maybe the shareholders get less or maybe they get nothing. But there is still value in the business.
Yeah, and do you know what? Just on a charting level, it's quite interesting to see that the current lows it hit, 93 pence, was a high back in August 10th. So that seems like a very good support level there, yep. 93 pence. But do you know what? It's nice to see you haven't changed your tune from all the controversy surrounding this company. You've always stuck there. Alan said, you know, I think there's a good company within this, the core of this company. There's lots of good companies there. So you stuck with it. And that's good. And that's, you know, what many a good investor does. You know, so fair play, Al.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Jess. I mean, I'm, you know, investing is an inherently risky business, and sometimes you make a call and you take a view and it doesn't work out. But, you know, there's a lot of money now in this company. Yes, it's got its legacy issues, but anyone can look at the company and look at the way the current administration are handling the company and its affairs, and it's whiter than white. It's belt and braces all the way. So it's being well run, and I'm sure any court would take into account that the legacy issues are prior issues. They will be interested in helping the company grow and provide prosperity for its employees and grow the company. So I'm sure that will be taken into account on any decisions they make on prior issues. So yeah, it's an exciting venture.
Yeah, you've been a steady head there, Al, in a tumultuous time, which is what they needed last Saturday, I think. Yeah. Last Friday in England, not changing their mind and changing strategy. But cheers, Al. Quindel, thanks very much, fella.
Thanks, Jess. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. By all means, click the link here at sharepickers.com. And today is suggested by Dali Picasso. I like the name. You can use any name you want, any name at all. So what's the name and ticker symbol? It's 88 Energy, 88E. I know this company. I've interviewed Dave Wall on the podcast, the director there. And I also hold stock in the company. And they've got a huge amount of... let me go through what Dali Picasso has written. What does the company do? Oil Explorer. Would you say this is a short, medium-term or long-term investment? Medium and long-term, drilling in October. What's the current price and market cap of the company? It is 0.56 pence and 13 million market cap. Name the three reasons why you think this company has potential. One, fledgling company. Two, drilling in very popular area with well-known companies with great success rate. True. 3, spudding in October with future drills also. And there was a point here that I put on the end, the fourth point. Number 4, possible buyout. True. So that's 88 Energy, suggested by Dali Picasso. And by all means, do your own research on that. And also, listen, what's happened? Thousands of people listen to this podcast on a daily basis. And so I know, you know, people get value out of this, but there's no dedication today. So listen, please, go to sharepickers.com, scroll down to see the little word there, the dedication, and click the link there. Then just write a little review and a 5-star rating, and I will dedicate the podcast to you, all right? Simple as that, free as charge. Don't forget, please, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on this podcast, as it's only just opinion. Please do your own research. Thank you for listening. Speak it tomorrow.
The ADBFN Podcast with Justin Waite.